Welcome! We've got another episode of AKA Teacher here. Today's episode is titled Politics Entering the Classroom. It's me and my buddy Joanna. How's it going, Joanna?
Hi, Angie. I'm doing all right. So I'm coming off an illness, and I really hadn't been sick in like years. So maybe I sound like a big baby, but this was like a huge shock to me. Like, I missed 2.5 days of school, and that's a big deal. And then coming back and like working without your full energy is, you know, you really take for granted how good you feel most of the time. And especially then in a classroom, how it like, it take, you know, your energy is their energy. Like, it goes down a little, that's kind of been going on. How about you?
Good week, busy. Here's the thing that's really uniquely, I feel like for me right now, is letter of recommendation time for college.
Oh.
So I teach mostly juniors. So then they come back their senior year for a letter of recommendation for college. And they just all, as I joke, I'm like, why do you guys all want to go to college so bad? Because I currently I've completed 10 and I have 15 in the queue.
What? Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh.
And I have probably like 5 more kids asking, like there's more coming.
Okay. I can't believe that colleges still require that. Come on. You guys need enrollment. Wow. You're doing letters of recommendation.
Seriously. Joanna, I really want to talk to some college admissions people and find out if anybody's really reading these.
Oh, I can find out.
It's a lot of work.
My son works in admissions office.
Yes.
I will ask him.
I want you to ask him. And then I'm telling everyone I know, because it takes a ton of time. Like,
well, I know
45 minutes.
Okay. Well, I do know that a friend of mine who sadly was a beloved teacher, but resigned, she actually is working. She is working as like an application reader for UW-Madison.
Okay.
Like a remote job. So somebody's right. Well, she's reading them.
Well, I think I'm ready to progress into kind of talking about what our topic it is today, which is politics entering the classroom. Sure. What are you thinking about as we enter into this conversation?
In general, I know at my school, there was a voter engagement, like a voter registration day on October 3rd. That was on Monday. I actually didn't get to talk to my friend who ran it to even find out what the turnout, you know, again, it's busy out here, but yeah. I do think about that. Yeah. I know that registering to vote is a requirement in my program. Like, it's just something we strongly recommend, where we're like, right, apply to colleges, fill out FAFSA, be sure you register to vote. And I really did only have one student though, who's eligible to vote in this next election. So I don't know. Our school does have a partnership with the League of Women Voters and the voter registration drives. Oh yeah. You should check them out. They'll come over. They do it all. They've got great stuff. So I think about that. And when I talk with my students, like you said, I'm not presenting, you know, like I'm not teaching about, you know, the election, I suppose, but we do definitely talk about voter engagement. And I know we had a conversation where the students were surprised by the low number of turnout, you know, where I'm like, you guys realize it's only like 20% of the population. Who even knows for a midterm election? I don't know, you know, like how it's not a high percentage of people that actually are engaged in the voting process. That was surprising to them.
Well, I'm excited in a second to talk with our host or with our guest, because, you know, the thing I feel like sometimes even my own self, I'm like, this whole system is already set up. I don't know. I feel like sometimes I can't make as much influence as I want. And I'm really curious what our guest does when he encounters kids
it'll
who
be
are
great.
Feeling that way, because we can't let a 17 and 18 year old already feel like they can't make a difference, you know?
Well, so. I do. I mean, I do notice that. Like, what do you pick up on that the kids say? Because I do notice, like, there's just really a lack of information. Like, and I think they get bombarded with so many things that, I do worry that maybe they tune out to some things. I was given the example last week that in our room, I play like spa music from just YouTube, and I don't have an account. We're just burning free YouTube. And so it's like all peaceful. And then all of a sudden it'll be like Ron Johnson, Mandela Bar. It's like these ads will play and, you know, they sound really like, and so I actually have a little bit of a concern that the kids just really tune out. I mean, and again, not that I don't know, but, you know, you're kind of they kind of joke about it and tune out, or I worry about that. But
well, Joanna, do you want to introduce our guest today and get us going on that part?
Sure. I'm really excited, Angie, because guess what? We have a guest today.
What?
Yes.
That's the first guest, actually.
Right. We have the first guest on the AKA Teacher podcast, and his name is Dan Hoppe. And Dan is currently a high school social studies teacher in the Howard Suamico School District. Prior to this year, he taught for 20 years in Stevens Point. So that's interesting, making that career move. But the really cool part is that Dan has been recognized for his efforts to engage students in being active and critical thinkers about civic and political issues. I know, you know, preparing for this interview with Dan, I read some of the articles and was like, oh my God, I just love it. Again, when we see and hear about great teaching. So Dan, welcome to the AKA Teacher Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So
I'm glad to be here.
Thanks. Did I miss any details when I gave your intro? Is there something that you would add?
No, I think that was a great introduction, and I've been doing this for 20 years, and it was interesting to hear your discussion in the beginning. And I think you bring up a lot of, you know, valuable comments and thoughts and concerns that teachers
well,
have.
Well, hey, that's why we were waiting for you to get on. We're like, okay, perfect. You know what? So in your position as a social studies teacher, you want to break it down for our listeners in terms of like what actually you teach and some of your thoughts to the things that we had talked about previously.
Yeah, for many years I teach in the high school, and have taught a wide variety of different classes, regular U.S. history and advanced placement U.S. history, and then the courses where kids are really interested in politics and government. I teach AP United States Government and Politics and AP Comparative Government. And so in those classes, you know, the curriculum includes the government and politics part of things. So you have to early on have that discussion that you're going to have discussions about politics, and you're going to have those discussions based on how politics play an important role in our government and how politics affect the government. So how does that go?
Because
that's where I come from.
As Angie's saying, like, I'm worried about every little thing I do. Mm-hmm. This is your world, and this is what you're doing all the time. So tell us a little bit about how do students respond even to hearing about, like, this is about government and politics? Like, what do you notice? Do they have an interest in understanding misinformation, disinformation? What's the student vibe? Yeah.
I definitely think there's they're coming from different backgrounds. You know, we start with the understanding or the teaching that where their political makeup comes from, and the number one factor is family, and other factors are school and their friends and if they belong to a community organization or a church. So you know, when teaching those classes, you get them to first understand where they're coming from, where their background and where, you know, their politics might lie. When you're having difficult discussions in the classroom, I think I've done an excellent job over my 20 years of I guess playing the devil's advocate And if it feels like the vibe of the classroom is going one direction, I like to throw in the other side and what the other side would be discussing, to give both sides so that they hear both sides. And that, as a teacher, that takes a lot of time, because you have to be able to study both sides pretty effectively and know what they're, where they're coming from and their talking points and you know, and things like that, so that you can play that, I guess, objective referee in the classroom and really try to balance out the discussion, because you'll have classrooms that, you know, lean more liberal and you'll have classrooms that lean more conservative. And you have to be like I said, objective person to provide them both sides. Otherwise, the discussion will just, you know, maybe get out of control a little bit, and you know, and you can lose them.
Well,
and then you have the few students, the few students that might be on the other side but feel overwhelmed by the other classmates that have kind of overtaken the discussion.
Have you noticed, is the polarization that we see on the outside, are you seeing that on the inside or not? Are students nicer to each other?
You are seeing that a little bit. I guess, you know, when you guys had your earlier discussion too about where kids are getting information, sure, and the disinformation, the last couple of years, as a social studies teacher, I felt like kids are looking for you to be the source of independent and neutral knowledge in many ways.
So much pressure.
In some ways, I don't want to equate myself to this, but you know, we don't have the nightly news like we did, like our grandparents and parents grew up with, the really respected journalists of like Walter Cronkite and Edward Murrow and Dan Rather. And so in some ways, I feel like when kids have asked questions about current events, you know, that they just don't have the information. I mean, yes, there's lots of things out on the internet, and sure, they've maybe heard what their parents' perspective is, but I feel like I'm the Walter Cronkite, that I have to give them the sort of objective, here's the facts of what's happening. This happened last year with the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. My students came in that morning and they just were clamoring for information. Mm. They just wanted to know what had happened. You know, they, you know, had heard it. There's tweets, there's whatever, social media, you know, popping up photos and things like that, but they just wanted the facts. And I
did
wanted
you have to like pull in all nighters
facts.
You'd be like, I got them right here. Like, how did you even handle that?
You have to stay up on it. You definitely have to. Yeah. I mean, it caught me off guard as well when Russia invaded Ukraine. And so I definitely had to try to search out information as well. So they were looking for that.
Yeah. And you know, wow, I remember that really impacted them. Something I remember my kids telling me was how it was really shocking to them. Like when they were scrolling TikTok, how it's like, ha ha ha, funny monkey, you know, crazy dance, dead body, you know, that really impacted how they were seeing it. And they were, again, my students are always very concerned about the human condition throughout. Mm-hmm. And so very interesting. Well, I did really in my
research. If I'd like to just add to that as well. I mean, the experience of that and why I brought up that, that event was last year we had a Ukraine foreign exchange student in my class as well. Mm-hmm. And Stevens Point also had a long sister, or does still, long sister city relationship with a city in Russia. So it's balancing the fact that, like, I knew this Ukrainian foreign exchange student was going to come in later in the morning, and the kids knew that they knew she was from Ukraine, and that's why I think they were, you know, looking for information. And it was a tense day. I was able to catch my student before class and just tell her that I was going to explain what had happened, you know, the day before, and try to provide the facts. And you know, you don't have to say anything. You know, if I'm just going to try to say what happened. And you know, I understand your family's under threat, and they were, and she was excellent. I mean, she was willing to talk about it, willing to talk about her family situation as well. After, you know, I kind of went through the facts, but it was one of those where it was trying to be very careful with how I selected my words, also understanding that we have this strong connection with a Russian sister city. And I tried to tell the students basically, and I think I do this with, you know, when you're talking about political leaders, and the people of the country are different than the political leaders. And countries I've visited, you know, in Vietnam and Russia and Germany, all the people, when you meet people face to face, they're not the leaders. You know, they're not making the decisions at the top of their government. And, you know, I think when you come from that approach and you're not bashing, you know, a country because of their political leader, you're telling the kids, you know, when you go visit these places, the people are going to be, you know, different than their mm-hmm. political leaders. They're going to be people. And you're going to meet them at you know, heart to heart and things like that as human beings do. So that's ultimately kind of, you know, what happened with that story, that I have a lot of Russian friends when I visited there. So they're not Putin, you know, they're not.
Right. And what a beautiful way to frame that, you know. What a beautiful way to frame that.
Yeah, I have some students actually. So the high school I teach at, I'm at Middleton High School, which is down in Madison area. And I have students from Russia, students from Ukraine, students who had parents and family members in Russia at the time. And I spent a lot of time checking in with both groups and with my students who I knew had family in Russia, just like actually kind of concerned of like, what kind of backlash are you experiencing? Are you experiencing anybody targeting? It's probably the wrong word. You, because you are from Russia, your mom lives there still, you speak with a Russian accent. And I was really thankful to know that because I have some kids who will speak pretty candidly to me, no one was experiencing a backlash from the kids' standpoint. Do you have any Russian students in your school, Dan, because of the sister city?
In Stephen's point, they did from time to time, and we had some not last year. So last year, you know, for that situation, but again, we do have some strong connections with you know, the school back in Rostov-Veliki is the sister city, with Stephen's point, and so there was concern of just you know, checking in with them and seeing how they were doing as well.
Well, what is it? So okay, so now I have a curious question. So. You're a teacher at school in Russia. What kind of like things were they allowed to say, not allowed to say? Because my student said that they were told that they should assume their phone was being tapped at all times. And they were told, whatever you do, do not talk about politics. So she would be on the phone literally with her mom. And her dad was like, whatever you do not bring it up. Don't talk anything about it. What kind of information were you getting from them as teachers?
Yeah, so we were meeting quite regularly over Zoom and meeting with students and things like that. When the invasion happened, there was sort of a cutoff of communication a little bit. They were hesitant in doing some more Zoom with students from Stephen's Point. So there was a little bit of that. When I visited Russia back in 2009 and stayed with a host family, we talked about politics, I guess, a little bit. It was interesting. One of them was pro-Putin, and one of them was pro-Medvedev. So, and kind of was anti-Putin. So the mother and father were kind of split in their politics. And it was interesting because that's what a lot of American families are, as well as, you know, one might be one side and the other might be the other side. We I have had the experience of having a exchange student from our sister city in my class as well, taking actually the United States government and politics course. And it's funny that you said something about the phone being tapped, because I believe I asked her a question about, I don't know, President Putin or something that had happened. And she usually was quite open in sharing other things about other topics, but she just kind of stopped, stared at me, and then pointed at her cell phone and just like thought, yeah, that her cell phone was being listened and things like that. So it was kind of an eye opening experience that because you said that they do kind of think that people are listening in and they're scared of that a little
bit. Well, fascinating. Thanks for sharing those experiences with us. If I could, sure. I'd like to go ahead and pivot to asking you about, you know, the next big thing, the midterm elections, and how that is going in your world. Like, are the students interested? How are you approaching it? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I sort of agree with how you guys talked about it earlier, that I think many of them are tuning out a little bit about the midterms. And to get them to be engaged voters, I agree that in the past we've had in Stevens Point, and I think Bayport does as well, as voter registration drives and really trying to promote those as a way that, you know, getting registered is a big step. Yep. The percentages go up tremendously of registered voters then go vote. So that's I think an important first step with talking to students about this. Again, if things come up in class, I mean, you have to be that objective referee. You have to realize that a lot of the things that might be brought up in class, and sometimes I haven't heard too much yet this year, moving into November. I mean, we're getting closer, so maybe the next couple of weeks, but there may be some student comments that, are inappropriate or kind of come out. And you have to realize a lot of times those are coming from different places where they've gained their political culture and their from and what they've heard, where they're coming from, their home and friends and you know, either community groups or other groups and things like that. And so you try to address it. If it's inappropriate, you should address it and, try to bring it back to the middle in the sense of I value your opinion. Your opinion is important. But you also have to realize we are in an educational setting that, we have to kind of make sure that everyone feels safe and secure in this environment to learn. And your opinion is important, but I also want you to think about how you can present it in a way that maybe is less threatening. And so when those instances come up, they do. I mean, kids will blurt out something or say something they've seen on the news and then, you know, kind of take a very politicized stance on it. And as a teacher, you need to step in and you need to make sure that you kind of build that environment that is productive and safe for all your students. If, you know, other students hear it and are going to feel, hurt by it.
Well, I certainly am appreciative and impressed with the work that you do. I know that you've been recognized for your craft and that it sounds like you're continually innovating and working on ways to bring up this engagement. And again, that it is just your world of teaching about the concepts of politics instead of, right? Like promoting politics. Mm-hmm. And correct. I think that's what's really important to share. When teachers could maybe be criticized or under attack, that's, you know, I know my social studies friends were like, we're teaching the concepts. We're not promoting a platform. And right, that's what professional educators do. It's just what we do. And so seeing your record of work and hearing you speak here on the show today, thank you so much. I just really appreciate it. Anything else you would want to add or share with the AKA Teacher Podcast listeners?
I just would add to that you also approach it as teaching about politics is you're teaching political science. And so there is that science part to it. And I agree with you about the concepts. And you can look at things in a more macro way of how United States politics trends have come and gone. And you teach about that. sure, there's the spark events and there's the, you know, events that are going to try to, you know, fire someone up. But you take a step back and we try to look at our American government system from a scientific way of like, you know, generally this is how things go and generally this is how things go. And
that information would bum me out. I will do that. Like, I'll talk to my social studies friends and be like, all right, I'm hoping for this. And they're like, yeah, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I get that's my curiosity too, coming from kind of like I know I'm a science teacher. I don't have a lot of a political curricula in my world. But when you think back, so you started in 2002, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So like 2002 you, then like let's go 2012 you, and then like now, how has your like teaching or your approach to teaching some of these current events, because there's been a lot over the course of 22 years. You were just right after 9/11. You have the election of your first Black president. So many things. How have you like juggled? Like, how have you changed, do you feel like, as an educator over that time?
Well, for teaching like politics, and I just said it's a science. The last 3-4 years, the science has kind of been turned upside down on its head a little bit, right? With the election of Donald Trump was you know, different. Was definitely a lot of the trends and how people kind of saw that. But then you could also look at it and say, I mean, it was a movement of populism and people were looking at wanting someone different, wanting an outsider, right? So there were predictions as well within that. You know, the change has been, I think I've just become more versed in a lot of different politics, in the sense of I've learned a lot from politics on the side that I don't agree with. I'll listen to radio shows and read newspapers from politics that aren't necessarily personally mine. And it gives me a good way and a good insight to be then that devil's advocate and play that objective thing. So 20 years ago, I probably got more fired up about reading things from maybe the other side of my politics. But now I think I take it more as, you know, this is good information. This is good to understand. It's good to understand the other side. You have to know the other side so that you know what you're fighting for.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and that's what I try to tell my students is how can you believe in something if you don't know what the other side is and what you don't believe in, right? So it's important that you find out about all the different sides and the whole spectrum of values and beliefs that people may have and what they would like government to do or not do, so that you know what you do like and that, you know, you have to know what you don't like. So that's kind of the approach, I think.
Dan, have you ever had, I feel like this would be the ultimate honor, have you ever had any students become a politician?
I have. I've had, a couple students have actually become interns at congressional offices, both at the state and national level. And then I've had some students become locally elected in Wisconsin Rapids. I think we had the city clerk was a former student from my classroom. Maybe there's a future president down the way as well. So they're not, I'm still only 20 years. So some of them are getting up to be about 35.
Okay,
So they're in that range, maybe for running for president.
Do the kids ever share what, cause I had a student a long time ago who was like, I want to be a senator. And very much was sharing all their political dreams with me, which I was like, neat. But like, do you have kids who would share with you, like, I want to go into politics. I want to do this as my major in college. And then like, what do you say to them? So you're like, hey, well, don't stop using Snapchat right now, though, you know, or something.
Yeah. You have to definitely bring that up. I've had some that have definitely expressed that. I thought I was going to go into politics too. I went to UW-Madison and I worked at the state capitol as a messenger. And, you know, I then kind of saw like kind of the grittiness and dirtiness of politics too. And I'm like, maybe I'll become a teacher instead, you know, and help others. So, but I've had ones that said, yeah, I want to do that. And they've kind of, many of them have gone similar paths where they major in political science, but I've had, just a couple off the top of my head, one student that became part of a nonprofit, an international nonprofit. She took her political science background and her Spanish major actually, and worked in the nonprofit, in a really kind of awesome nonprofit that goes and helps, poor areas around the world and things like that. And then another student that went to George Washington and again interned in offices in Washington, D.C. And she's working on environmental policy for a cool think tank and for, in Washington, D.C. So yeah, there's definitely those stories of they kind of take the political science route, and it doesn't necessarily always lead to, you know, a congressman or a congresswoman, or it leads to other paths that political science can take you. So
I think that's really, really interesting cool to hear what is, you know, like you said, what this produces kind of like career life wise. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Dan, I also just got to make sure that we formally shout out 2019 Wisconsin History Teacher of the Year.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Do you have a trophy?
I think it might have been a
plaque. It's a plaque.
I recently moved, and I believe all the awards are in the garage, packed away. So
very special.
I'm trying to minimize my life and not unpack everything that I packed up from a house and moving to an apartment. So,
but what an honor, and we appreciate having you share all that awesomeness with us here.
All right, thank you.
Well, Dan, we're going to move into our next part of the day, which is our Pass the Mic session. And in our session, I'm pulling up the article right now, or our note. In the Pass the Mic session, Dan, we have pre-service teachers or teachers who are in the field share with us stories, questions, things for us to ponder, things for us to kind of chew. And I've got this week's that I'd love to share for you with Rachel from Rockford. Rachel says, I work with a lot of international students, and one day a student from Sierra Leone came back from gym class in tears. He wanted to play basketball, but the other kids wouldn't let him play. The other kids were black and told him that he couldn't play because he acted too white. My student was so frustrated. He pointed to his arm and said, "We have the same color skin. Why do they treat me like this?" But they didn't let him play, and he left furiously. As a white teacher, the moments of racism were really hard for me, because I had to explain how this thing worked against my student without them understanding it. So, I really hate those moments, especially where we find ourselves unable to help a student understand why racism is taking place and why our system can be so crummy. What are your guys' initial thoughts?
Yeah, those are hard, right? And those are sort of in the moment type experiences where, you know, how you're going to comfort that student, right? You're going to at least try to get that student to a place where they feel that you support them, right? And you're there for them, and hope that they can come to you again if something like that happens. I am a person that likes to reach out for my resources that I have as well. And so I'm probably going to reach out to, I know a lot of schools are having diversity coordinators and working with them, or just if it's a school counselor and trying to, nip it in the butt a little bit and get it, so that that incident doesn't happen again. But I don't think I'd tackle that by myself, right? I don't think I would, try to handle that whole situation that's happening, obviously, in different parts of the school and in different environments. I'd be reaching out for a lot of different resources.
Yeah, when I think about Rachel from Rockford sending in this story, I do think, first of all, I think my approach would be just to address the immediate disconnection. you know, when, because that's what we really feel is pain from feeling separate and disconnected and just how that feels. And yeah, I mean, sometimes when we talk about these issues, we can get lost in the issue instead of, like I just said, the feeling. And the feeling is what connects us, and the feeling is what unites us. And so also I always like to circle back. Like, that's what, you know, we sometimes we pose it as like, you're going to be like the superhero who comes in and disrupts racism. And it's like, it is happening all around us. And how we deal with it, I think, is, you know, individually with those students or in a small group, you know, later on, and perhaps, as Dan said, with somebody else. But I do think it's teachable. These are teachable moments. And I do think it happens a lot. But the bottom line is, it's the feeling, it's the emotion that that then affects the rest of, you know, our day and makes us question ourselves and who we can really connect with. I don't know. There's something in it about that separation.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. I'm bummed when I hear that, especially, you know, so we're talking about a student from another country. Mm-hmm. So it's not even like necessary. I'm going to make the assumption that this student might not even get it in terms of like, oh, so there's such a thing as acting white. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering, I don't want to shift from that in that spot really quickly, but I know, Dan, you've had a lot of international students that you've interacted with. How do you help your students even kind of get an idea of what are some of like the, you know, the unspoken of rules, some of the untalked about norms and icky, yep, that's an icky feeling. How do you help them acclimate in those moments?
Yeah, that, I mean, it's that's a cultural thing, right? And you know, I like traveling internationally, and when you walk into a new country, how you navigate those social norms is you have to watch what's kind of going on, right? You have to kind of look around and see what's going on. But a lot of the international students I've been able to interact with in the classroom is because they've been part of my U.S. history course or an AP U.S. history course. And so it's fascinating to have them provide their insight when teaching about, you know, our very complex American history that includes, obviously, a long period of where people were enslaved, right? Human beings were enslaved, and how that has played a major, you know, factor in a lot of things that have affected our history. And so I think that's kind of been my best situation of just having them in the U.S. history classroom, learning about a history that they are very, you know, blank about. It's a blank slate. They're not coming from a background of learning about Johnny Appleseed in second grade and George Washington cutting down the cherry tree or was that Lincoln? I'm not sure, but that's a social studies teacher. I better know. I think it was George. Yeah. So they don't come from that background of hearing all those, you know, American history stories growing up, and they can provide some unique insight, but helping them with the social norms, you know, it's just, or just the norms of how to, you know, it's a lot of my students have just been good about like keeping their eyes open and interacting and just seeing how things kind of work.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for kind of sharing your thoughts on that. Joanna, have you had very many international students in your career, in your time at your school?
No, I would say no.
I've had a few. And so it is very much, I feel like you're kind of, I actually, in some ways, you know, have like these moments where I feel like I'm almost mothering too much. So this is what a homecoming dance is.
Oh.
Let me explain to you a corsage, you know. But yeah, I feel like when we have international students, sometimes We want them to have a really good experience. And so we might find ourselves overcompensating for all the help we want to give them. And maybe we should kind of instead point them in the directions of student leaders, other adults who can support them, and some of the supports that are beyond just one person having to shoulder it all.
Well, guess what, friends? It's already time to wrap it up. So thank you so much, Dan, for being here. Thank you, Angie, for engaging. And most of all, thanks to our audience for listening. We would like to put out there, though, a request for stories and questions. We'd like pre-service and early career teachers to write us with questions about any aspect of teaching. We also like to receive interesting stories from the classroom from current teachers. You can record a voice memo or type it up and send it to education@pbswisconsin.org with AKA teacher in the subject line. Please go ahead and visit our podcast website at pbswisconsineducation.org/AKA teacher to find helpful resources connected to today's episode. Take care, everybody, and we'll see you next time.